Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Baldly Go, the officially unofficial podcast for all the Star Trek that we care to cover. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Star Trek Strange New Worlds, Season 2, Episode 2, Ad Astra Per Aspera. Aaron, how you feel about this episode? What do you think about that title? That title's good, right?
Every time I saw it, like on the screeners and in Gmail and in my show notes, I always think about the Ad Astra meme. Brad Astra is Sad Astra about his dad. Okay. Astra and Ad Astra. That's all I can think about.
That's fair.
But I like how they work the theme into their main story. Like I joked about, like, do you think we're going to get a Measure of the Man episode similar to the is Data his own individual, or can he be a can you enslave sentient beings in the Federation from Star Trek season Next Generation season 2? And I'll be damned, this is pretty much a Measure of the Man. But you know, it's been 30 plus years since that episode came out, and I felt like it resonates a little bit differently with slightly different kind of social issues. But I like seeing the Federation wrestle with its and it's not like, that's the other thing, it's like, it's not like the Federation has no reason to be fearful or to have prejudice against genetically modified individuals. You know,
there were wars fought over this stuff. Yeah,
tens of millions died in these wars, and it's just staggering body toll. So I actually really liked it. It's really crazy. This is something that Seppenwall mentioned in his review of Strange New Worlds. I got a chance to see that when the first episode dropped. You know, he got the same 6-episode package we got. We're not watching in advance. I know he's seen the whole thing, and see, he echoed some that, like, it's kind of wild that in 2 episodes of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, the star, ostensibly Ansel Adams, Christopher Pike, has been in it for what, 10 minutes maybe out of both episodes? Yeah. And the show's just humming along. That's pretty incredible. What did you think of the 2nd episode?
I think mechanically it has some problems. We've recently watched some courtroom drama films, and I will say this is not a particularly good one. This one feels like it's a written for television, fantasized version of a courtroom drama. But also, I really do appreciate, you know, the points that are made. The heart of the episode, I think, is very strong. And I've heard that, you know, if I have qualms with this episode, buckle in for the next, like, 4, because apparently the first 2 are a little rocky and the next 4 are pretty good. So,
oh, wow. Well, I've been,
if this is as bad as it gets, sign me up, you know?
Yeah, we'll be eating well from our replicators as Star Trek fans.
Yeah, because I did quite enjoy this episode, even down to, like, the little stuff that they do with the atmosphere of this planet is not breathable for Pike, but it is for these genetically modified Illyrians. I like all that little world building stuff they do.
Yeah, I like that. I even thought the twist at the end where, you know, I thought that was, because you go back and watch Measure of a Man, it really feels like a junior high school courtroom proceedings. Like, it's like, you just,
but it wasn't like official, right? That was more like, that felt like an ad hoc court to me. This feels extraordinarily official. They have a building for it.
It felt to me like a Supreme Court case, you know, like this is like everyone go into it knowing that there was, like, you know, this is a big high profile case. I like that there was some, you know, villains. It's always like they had the the Vulcan prosecutor played the Madrox, wasn't that his name? The guy who's gunning the disassembled Data. Like, there's always someone with an axe to grind. Yeah. Maddox, not Madrox, the multiple man. Maddox. Yeah, I thought that stuff, the twist at the end where, you know, she introduced all this testimony that's supposed to be damning to particular Captain Pike. Mm-hmm. And it's this admittedly high stakes defense strategy, but she hammers it into the shape of an official request for asylum. I thought that was pretty good. And it skewers the Federation with its own principles and ideals, which I thought this was so much better than, you know, as much as I like Measure of a Man. It's kind of insane when you watch that show to think that was even, you know, like, who the fuck thought you could own Data? What? Because he's got an off switch. Like, Riker's got an off switch, too. Let me show you. It's remote controlled, in fact. It's with a phaser. Boo. You know, it's like, look, he's gone. No more continuum of consciousness. I thought this one, I felt like maybe because it's more modern and it has like multiple shades of meaning, too. Like, mm-hmm. there's a little bit that I think can apply to a bunch of different situations nowadays. I thought the social commentary was, you know, it's pretty heavy handed, but that stuff usually is in Star Trek. You're not, you know, it wasn't supposed to be a debate about Data's sentience and his existence and his ability to be a free person, right? You're supposed mm-hmm. to, the Federation is supposed to look like they're a bunch of idiots. And I think that works here too, but even better, because that was just like, this guy wanted to take Data apart to make more robots, more slaves. Like, this is something, you know, like goes to the heart of one of the deepest wounds the Federation has, this eugenics wars and how vulnerable they felt to these super soldiers. And it just felt like, again, it just felt like a culture coming to grips with something that probably they needed to for a long time. And mm-hmm. the point of, like, that we made last week, that, like, the Federation is not a perfect organization, but that's what it strives to be.
Yeah.
Like, the Federation is never the institution. It's like, well, we just can't do the right thing. It's just too hard. It's impossible. Like, mm-hmm. That's never supposed to be the final answer for the Federation. You know, we'll fucking invent. We'll flip a Benzai. We'll reverse the polarity. We will separate the saucers until justice is found. We'll modulate
the shield frequencies.
Yeah. We'll rotate those shield and phaser harmonics until the Borg can no longer adapt. It's even though it is set in this kind of cigar chomping, blood wine drinking, I like the fact that they're acknowledging that we're not supposed to be a bunch of corrupt, weirdo, gray area anti-heroes on these shows.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't get much more classic Trek than a courtroom battle over an individual's rights.
Sure. Yeah. And it doesn't always take place in the courtroom literally, but that's what's on trial, right? The ethics, the moralities of the Federation and humanity. And I think this is a pretty good example of that. Maybe a better example of that than even what they did with Dr. Bashir in Deep Space Nine. It's hilarious because the same day I watched this in my rewatch, I got to the episode with Bashir and the discoveries you make around him being genetically modified. I always forget
that he is genetically modified. Yeah.
He was a real dummy, and then his parents took him when he was like six to go get enhancements and created a new life for him, and now he's one of the best doctors.
Was he really not just average? He was like below average. Really? He's dumb?
They have a whole thing. And so that's what's kind of great about that episode is, you know, you have Measure of the Man where you examine it from, like, what does it mean to be human? And, like, this legal perspective, are we going to define this person as a person, give them the same rights? In the Bashir episode, they examine it more from, what does it feel like to be that? Like, what is a lived experience? How do you feel about your parents when they took you to have these enhancements that are illegal and you have to now hide who you are? All that stuff is explored in that episode. But this episode kind of does both. Like, legally, are we gonna acknowledge that these people are people and should be treated as such? And also, what is the experience of those people living it? And I thought that was really solid.
Yeah.
I will say, I don't think this is a perfect episode. I think the courtroom drama part is kind of bullshit. And you mentioned this feeling like a Supreme Court case. It did in its importance, but it did not in its fanfare or any of that. It was kind of bizarre to me that they try and frame this as a very small, unimportant decision by this court. And I guess, like, technically by the law, it is. But can you imagine? I mean, there must be people following this. The news outlets must be reporting on this. There must be a lot of people hinging their hopes and dreams. I mean, imagine the crowd that is gathering and watching this unfold in the Illyrian territories. And they don't go into any of that. They don't have a moment of triumph where people are cheering and saying, yes, we are getting some recognition.
So I disagree, because, like, I think they maybe they told, not showed, but they mentioned that, like, this is, like, half of the quadrant is going to be aware of this case and its importance. And Starfleet was trying to make it a small thing and make it go away, but I think it belies its importance when, didn't they mention that, like, the Chief Justice of the Federation was presiding over it? Like, they when they introduced all the different, you know, the weird alien guy, like, it might even been the president. Like, there was some high ranking. So it's like, the Federation, kind of like our modern day Supreme Court, tries to duck, you know, trying to do any precedents, and, you know, tries to put that stuff off, and it's trying to make the most limited case possible. And the thing that, even though this was a huge personal victory, by the way it went, the way everything turns out is, like, it's very muted. Like, Federation still has their anti-genetic modification laws on the books.
This ruling only applies to her.
It's a limited asylum case. So they were able to shrink it back down to the narrowest thing at the end. So it was a little, but it's also framed as, like, a first step. And so I think they had their cake and ate it too, in a way that I thought was pretty clever.
Well, I felt like the second cake was sitting there waiting to be eaten, and they never ate it. Like, I, because you mentioned, like, show don't tell, and I think that's what they should have done. They should have had some frame of reference beyond just the crew watching this, and they're like,
they want, like, a 7-year-old Illyrian watching at home, like, mommy, daddy, I want to join up a Starfleet. Tough kid, you're still super illegal. But maybe if we have enough bad experiences going forward with the Federation, you can claim asylum from them.
Like, yeah. I did want some insight into what the Illyrians were thinking, or what the general Federation citizens were thinking.
Also, I thought it was weird that the defense attorney, the high profile civil rights lawyer. She kept on seeming like the big bone of contention between her and Uma was that she couldn't hide her identity. But, like, she seemed extremely human. I was waiting for her to glow or to have a sixth finger or something, but, like, she looks like a bone stock human. So I didn't. That never. And then it's like, I guess at the end, like, she got to go to the city and pretend that they were human, and she stayed at the city that was identified as Illyrian. But, like, again, that seemed like it was a family choice, not a, like, oh, you couldn't pass for human type of thing.
As a matter of fact, I didn't see a single Illyrian who I thought couldn't pass as human.
Right. But I wonder if you can clock them a lot easier if you are, like, a human.
I mean,
in the
they
23rd
didn't
century.
Have any nose prosthetics. They didn't have any, like, forehead prosthetics, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know what that was all about, because she, I don't know. She seemed perfectly.
They're all good. I noticed they're all extremely good looking, these Illyrians. Is that it? It's just like, you're just too fucking good looking.
That's it.
But then half the most
you need
of the
to
Enterprise
check Chapel. You need to check Pike. You need to check some of these people for Illyrian.
If you looked at the
genes.
Bone structure of that that Vulcan, he's got to have Illyrian blood. It's too perfect. His cheekbones. Yeah. No, you're correct.
Anyway. All that is to say, yeah, I like the episode, and I'm excited to hear that maybe these next ones are going to be even better.
Hell yeah.
Set phasers to add. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Captain on Bridge, welcome back to Baldly Go. All right, let's get into the recap. We start with flashback to Una's childhood when she was apparently injured, but her parents couldn't take her to the doctor because we'll find out later, like, you need secret sympathetic doctors because they apparently lived in Federation territory there.
And her glowing immune system cannot heal a compound fracture nor save her from the infection that would set from that.
She says later in this episode that if they didn't find a doctor in the middle of the night to treat her, that she would have died. That does not look anything like a girl who's on death's door from an infection.
Maybe it's something like her. Yeah. It's like, are there rare instances where your Illyrian immune system works against you? You know, like if you, like, it can't heal a broken bone, and it predicates on being able to just overwhelmingly put on a fence. So it's like, it's, I don't know. I tend to agree. But
yeah, she looks like a girl who, like, missed her soccer match because her leg was hurt. But, like, not. I mean, she should have been passed out, lying in that bed, sweating and shaking. And yeah, if you want me to believe she's near death.
It's too bad, too, because I like the weird, I like the cold open on this kind of, like, memory of her thinking about the time she was deprived as a child. And we don't really understand the context of it. And then we later find a true context of it late in the third act. And, you know, a lot of shows pull to try this, like, out of order kind of storytelling, and it doesn't work. And I thought this worked pretty well.
I did too. Yeah. Both from this flashback stuff and also, like, what happened between Una and Neera. I thought that stuff made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, then we come back to the present day where Captain Patel offers Una dishonorable dismissal from Star Trek. Yep, you're off the show in exchange for pleading guilty about lying on her application to Starfleet.
Yeah, you're getting the Denise Crosby deal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're getting exiled from Star Trek. You squawked a little too much.
Getting the Terry Farrell treatment.
Yeah, that's the real, because Denise did come back as a Romulan clone temporal loop thing, but yeah.
I don't think she... I'm glad they were able to get a different lawyer, because this lawyer seems too timid to be a lawyer. He does not feel like a lawyer to me.
He feels like a very junior grade JAG officer who's scared to death, who knows that there's supposed to be a proper outcome to this. And he's like, oh God, please take the deal. Cause I'm, and then I like how she's smart enough to call that out, you know, like, you, how are you going to represent me when you work for this other side?
Yeah.
And he's like, sense. Yeah, that's I should recuse myself right now.
Yep. And she's kind of threatening Una, you know, you don't want to get others dragged into this. I assumed threatening Pike at that point, which
there's 2 years of imprisonment. You know, that's not, you know, you can just avoid all that stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Let's go over to Pike, who goes to Volterra Nebula to find a lawyer for Una. He manages to half convince Neera, one of Una's old friends, to take the case, but she still hasn't said yes. Until the very next shot.
Yeah, I actually thought the scene of Pike wearing a rebreather and trying to wait out the secretary was a good moment of comedy. Like, I thought he's got pretty good timing, and like him, yeah, she can see the thing on his suit. And he's like, I can wait here all day. And it goes from 2% to 1%. She goes, I don't think you can. He's like, try me, as he's passing out, and it starts making these old timey Star Trek flatlining noises. I thought that was really funny, and also kind of touching. The, like, I think the implication is he's gonna he's going to use his own mortal frame to shame this person into seeing him.
And if the Lyrians think they have it bad with the Federation now, wait until one of their most decorated captains dies in the office because they wouldn't give him an appointment, you know?
Yeah, and it's like also introduces the idea that, like, you know, these are not Khan. These are people who were trying to modify themselves so they had a fighting chance to settle this planet. Mm-hmm. That otherwise you can see it's killing Pike with just seconds of exposure to it. It gives you a little pre-sympathy for, like, these aren't like Bashir's parents are trying to design a child. This isn't Khan, like a genetically superior Superman that might take over. These are just people trying to, yes, they're enhancing themselves. Yes, they are changing themselves, but they're doing it so that they can live out a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
And there's ways we could probably take those meanings into our present day, which I'm sure we'll get into later.
Yeah. There's an interesting detail in this scene about some Illyrians trying to reverse their mods and it having some bad outcomes.
Sure.
Potentially. I don't know. I'm curious to see how much they're going to do with Illyrians in the future. If this is going to be kind of a season arc, you know, not obviously not with her case, but with the Illyrians in general, because I want to know more about them.
Especially since I think they're going to bring Noonien Singh's mods back into it. That, like, you know, mm-hmm. I talked about this in the preview podcast. Like, I thought last year was all about actually she's not superior at all. I mm-hmm. think they're going to start playing around the idea that she's in. And so it's this genetic modification, accepting the fact that some people have the freedom and ability to change themselves at maybe fundamental levels that we might not be comfortable with. I could see that being a through arc through the series, you know, not the major one or not the entirety, but, like, yeah, it's relevant to our and we got two crew members that we know of so far who are, you know, one is still, I guess, semi-closeted or, like, is passing for, like, a person who has no modifications, and the other one who's modified but hiding. Yeah, like I said, it's pretty easy to draw some connecting dots there.
And there's a lot of just ethical questions. Like, how do you condemn someone for having mods when they were given them as a child and they had no option, you know?
Sure.
Can she not serve in Starfleet because her parents made a choice 40 years ago?
Right.
This hardly seems fair.
Yeah, and this is where a lot of the bigger picture things where Pike is trying to tempt her with, like, you know, I know you don't like me. Because there's also a lot of, you know, history that they just sketch to. It's like, why does this person not like Una? Why mm-hmm. They used to be close friends, but now she's a very asserted that she's not my friend and she's willing to let her twist in the wind when she's the best civil rights attorney. And it's because there's a lot of hurt, you know? And I like how Pike's like, you know, the Federation is just dead wrong about you Illyrians. And she's like, well, congratulations for discovering empathy. Let me know when the rest of the Starfleet discovers it out, mm-hmm. you know, on their continuing missions. And he's like, well, you know, this is your chance to strike a blow. And it's funny because, like, he is offering her the same chances that Una is going to, you know, be really mad at her taking, because he's essentially saying, hey, here's a case you can grandstand and soapbox and make your points.
Uh-huh.
And then later, Una's going to be, why are you grandstanding and soapboxing and making your points against the Federation?
I was told I could.
This, I think, is interesting, that it felt like Pike was a little bit more bolder in his activism than Una was. And I almost to the point where on second watch, I'm like, are they trying to make a point about allyship? That sometime you need to follow, like, you know, you want to go in there and, like, with your fucking crusader hat on and your sword and your shield and rough ride and do this. But, like, sometimes it's best, almost every time, all the time, it's best to, like, let the repressed minority kind of, like, lead and have the game plan. And you just kind of, like, but, you know, you got, they're both Illyrians. They both have strong feelings about what's happening to them. It's just a question of tactics, I guess. But I don't think ultimately that's what they were going for, but it was interesting that, like, Pike is, like, more, a little bit more gung-ho because he's not the one probably going to pay the price, right? Uh-huh. it's easy for him to be an activist because he's him or no one like him is going to pay a penalty, he thinks anyway, at this stage, for backing the wrong horse, you know?
Right. So then Nira goes to see Una to hear her version of the story, and she needles her about essentially being a race traitor and agrees to take the case for the sake of Illyrians everywhere. Because, yep. Yeah, here's where we get the information about some Illyrians having mods they can't hide and some who refuse to. Although I will say, I think they make that point 9 or 10 times in this episode.
Yeah, for sure.
I get it. Would have been nice to see it also, but.
And again, at this stage, we don't really understand like the things she's saying. Like, in principle, we can get that like she's been able to successfully hide the fact that she's a metahuman for this time. And oh, you've had your fun pretending to be them, and now it's causing you and you're running back. And I it would have been a little stronger if what'd you say this woman's name? Mira?
Nira, I think. With
Nira.
Yeah.
If Nira was visibly different to where plausibly she couldn't pass as human, but I'm not. Yeah. But like, we eventually find out that I guess it was they were divided into cities, and that was what the big deal is. But. Mm-hmm. I think it works because you'd obviously see a person who's like, oh, you know, you don't want anything to do with us. Now that your career is threatened, you're coming in begging us, you know, an Illyrian for help. A fellow here, fellow Illyrian. Oh, you want to do is like, oh, what, you know, you haven't been with us for this whole time. The idea that there has to be some kind of coming correct before. Mm-hmm. She's going to just jump at the chance. And then maybe make sure her heart's in the right place too. Mm-hmm. Because maybe you have been like sipping a little bit too much of the Federation's punch.
And I like how they bring that around later in the episode.
It's tough because like we really like Una as fans of the show, and it's like it's easy for Nier to just come across as just like unmitigated bitch, right? But
sure.
I felt like, especially by the time you get to the end of the episode, everything is pretty fully dimensional.
Yeah. Agreed.
Except for the Vulcan. The Sarek's old buddy. He's an asshole.
Oh yeah, no. He's supposed to be. But he's a foiled asshole. So
true.
All is well. We see Batel, who is pissed and goes off to tell goes to tell off Pike because Una turned her plea deal down. And, you know, we hear Pike talk about how morally opposed he is to the job that Batel's been hired to do, or assigned to do, I guess. She doesn't have a choice. What if the law is wrong? Yeah, good question. There's a lot of laws that are wrong morally, ethically. What do you do? In our system, so that's the thing, like, we're talking about a fantasy court system, right? And I feel like they get away with a lot of stuff that you don't get away with in modern courtroom dramas simply because we don't know how their legal system works exactly. But it doesn't feel like you could pull this same thing unless you were in front of a jury of peers, maybe. Then you could get them to ignore laws, but you can't really get a judge to ignore a law. That's not their job. Their job is to hand out sentences according to laws. If you want to change laws, you got to go through our Congress.
On the other hand, Batel is, as a prosecutor, prosecutors do have wide latitude in what they choose to prosecute and what they choose not to prosecute. And sure. I think Pike's got a reason that, like, or he's got a legitimate gripe that, like, yeah, it's the law and you got to do what the law, but like, also, you know, like, we decide in Nuremberg that defense, like, you're just following orders and following the rules only goes so far. Mm-hmm. And like this kind of case, like, and boy, I liked how they also brought it at the appropriate. It wasn't like the Federation was going to kill her and grind her bones up to feed to unmodified children. Like, the penalty was disgraced discharge and you can't serve in Starfleet, and then they're not stripping your rights as a citizen, they're not throwing you in jail, you just have to give up. Like, the stakes felt like it was appropriate for all the melodrama, you know. And I like that even Nira's pointing that out. She's like, well, if you don't like it, then okay, well, your experiment Federation failed but blew up, take your discharge and go and be a real regular ass person like any of us. So yeah, it wasn't, you know, because a lot of times they you go right to like concentration camps and execution and stuff like that. Like, this feels like, yeah, no, it's not that. It's just you're going to lose your job. You're going to lose the thing that you trained your whole life for. Something is meaningful, a life of service that you had set up for yourself.
Which you came by dishonestly in the first place, right? So, like, is it really that much of a sacrifice, you know? And it is to her, for sure. But yeah, it's not life-ending.
Yeah.
Can I just say, it's an especially cruel fate to grind someone up and feed them to children in a society that has, like, matter reclamation units and replicators?
Oh, yeah. It's
to
punitive.
Grind
no...
them?
Yeah. Like, uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Like, they're a coffee bean? I don't know, man. That seems cruel, but that's how they do it.
Yeah, I got to get a light roasting, grind her up. Those Illyrians, man, they're like taurine. They're like three times stronger in caffeine, and you drink their bones properly steeped.
I hope she's oily enough. Let's go to the meeting of the legal teams. They meet with an admiral, and this is going to be the presiding admiral over this case. I don't know her exact position. Where Battelle modifies the charges against Una because she declined this plea deal. She adds bioengineering, lying, and sedition. Two counts of it. Seeking 20 years in a federal penal colony.
Yeah. Now, this is some shit right here. I don't think that flies on Earth courthouse, at least here in America. Like,
modifying
if you reject
the charges?
If you reject a plea deal, I don't think the prosecutor can go back. Now, they can throw the book at you and be like, we're going to throw only half the book if you accept the plea deal. But, like, not knowing the full jeopardy that you're going to be under before you accept or reject a plea deal seems like some kangaroo Banana Republic bullshit.
Yeah, I don't think that flies in our court system. But, hey,
what'd you say the Vulcan's name was? I thought it was Pasak. It's Battelle?
No, but Battelle is the captain.
Right, Battelle. Okay.
Pike something. I forget what she is to him.
It's a Romulan. The Vice Admiral Pasak, who came behind, and he's the one clearly behind the escalation of charges, and he's the dick.
I was a little worried when I saw the Vulcan on the prosecution team, because they're pretty logical. I imagine they have a pretty good command of law.
Oh, I bet. But he's also, his last is Pasak. That sounds like it sounds like a Klingon slur. Yeah, it's like something to do with his Pasak. They'd spit at you, you know, if you said something rude over the table.
Pound their fists, spill all the bloodline. Pasak!
Yeah. Or something you'd be taunted, like, human, you have no Pasak. I don't say this about many Vulcans. Real punchable face too.
Yeah.
Got that smug, logical, superior.
I'm trying to think if I've ever seen a Vulcan with a shaved head. This might be the first.
Man, there's been a lot of Vulcans when I think about all the scenes of Spock going in his robes and, like, you know, going to the High Vulcan Council. There might have been a bald woman or three in some of those scenes.
Yeah, especially when you're fraternizing with Vulcan monks. Like, definitely there's a bald Vulcan in there somewhere.
Yeah, really, really merging with the infinite diversity and infinite combinations. You lose some follicles when you do that.
I felt
that.
Like it gave him a more sinister look. I don't know why.
It does, yeah. So, I'm 33% more evil since I lost my hair, that's for sure.
Yeah. Imagine if he had a goatee. Oh, my God.
Mirror Vulcan with a goatee. Maybe Mirror Universe Pasak is a really cool guy.
Oh, yeah.
Very totally empathetic, cool. Not judgmental.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, this guy hung out with Sarek a lot. Hung out with Spock's dad, right? So,
yeah.
What's that all about? I want to know more.
Apparently, Sarek had a whole old boys network because Spock cited him as his least favorite of his father's old colleagues. So I wonder if we're going to get, is this going to be like, you know, how they had with Quark, where you kept on meeting different Romulan or not Ferengi, like the Grand Nagus and the different politicians and the mothers and wives. Like, are we going to meet like a cavalcade of Sarek's old buddies and they're all just.
Yeah, let's do it.
Vulcan assholes.
You sure?
Copper-based blooded assholes.
Sounds good to me. So Neera and Una start to go over their case. Una wants to go on the stand to show how normal and not dangerous a Starfleet officer she is. But Neera tells her, no, we're going to do it my way. And Una agrees.
Yeah, and she's got good reasons, because all the things she says is eventually going to come true. It's like, look, if your friends take the stand, or you take the stand, then they're going to be subpoenaed left, right, and center, and it's going to blow up in your faces.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to talk about this show. I didn't notice this in season one, but this show has got some of the coldest openings I've ever seen. Like, we're 10 minutes, 12 minutes into this show's runtime, and they hit me with the credits. I was genuinely shocked. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
These are frosty openings.
Sure. I'm okay with that. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. It's a good time. Yeah, when they hit her with the 20 years. But yeah, 12 minutes into the episode.
So Neera's given Una's old quarters, I think, on the Enterprise to stay in while she's defending her. Lon brings up the possibility that some of the evidence against Una might have been gathered illegally. And she asks if that's useful. Neera says, yeah, probably. And she says, well, I'll look into it. Because she doesn't have all the details yet.
It's very Star Trek to say that there is this landmark Starfleet case that establishes the fruit of the poisonous tree defense. I'm like, God damn.
When,
I think
1850.
Yeah, I was going to say, I want to see them cite an English common law precedent. That's what I want.
Right.
I want, I want an obscure Federation policy to that the Vulcans have to abide by based on some fucking thing that somebody in 1713 did in England. That's what I want.
Maybe they just, I assume they just threw out all the laws when they started the Federation. Every law gone. We're rewriting the legal system from scratch. And so that's why you need all these
modern
precedents.
You'd have to have like a Federation charter meeting where like all the founding members came and like hammered. Because like the civilizations are just so different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of things.
China and the U.S. and Brazil and Italy. Yeah.
And there's stuff we can all agree on. Like, you know, murder's pretty bad and stealing.
Sure.
And you probably can't buy it. But like, there's a wide range of ethical and moral things that are just kind of preference if we get right down to it.
Totally.
It'd be fearsome to craft some kind of legislation. It would be binding against all the Federation members.
The one where they sat down and said, what should the drinking age be? They were just like, you know what? Let's create a new alcohol that's not really alcoholic. Let's just get rid of that whole thing. Mm-hmm. Drink it at any age, but you'll never get drunk.
Except for Romulan ale, we can all agree should be banned everywhere, all the time.
Yes.
I like how they established here that the lieutenant is concerned that her outburst in a private journal might have been the, you know, the smoke alarm that alerted the Federation. There's a little bit of a B plot of her grappling with how she feels about being a genetically modified lineage and whatnot. Yeah.
And potentially, you know, getting Una outed. It's pretty good. I like it.
Sure.
Batel sits down with Pike and he recounts the story about meeting Una for the first time. And then she asks him when he first found out that Una was a Lyrian, making the point that he should absolutely not testify in this case for the safety of himself and his whole crew.
It's funny, on second watch, it's very clear what she's doing, that like she's being she's essentially a prosecutor trying to get a witness into a pattern of answering easy questions, and it's really quick, just so when you hit him with the hammer, they clam up and look guilty, and he fell right into it, you know.
And it works so well because they have this easy pre-existing relationship where he might believe that this person is just sitting down with him to reminisce for a minute, and then hammer him with the questions he can't refuse to answer.
I thought that was really good, and it really you know, because like he's, you know, Pike is confident in the fact that justice will prevail in the Federation, and like both sides are trying to tell him in his last two scenes, like, don't get too comfortable thinking that we're going to win this because we're right. Like, this is the law, dude. This, that being right is nice, but it doesn't mean you're going to prevail, right?
Being right is 2/10 of the law.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like this next scene quite a bit where Ortegas and M'Benga are sitting there watching Spock and the Vulcan prosecutor across the room, kind of just imagining what they must be saying.
Mm-hmm.
And Ortegas is like, yeah, they must be buddy-buddy, you know, I could see the way they're acting. And M'Benga's like, I wouldn't be so sure about that. They read their body language. And then Spock comes over and says, I hate that guy, essentially.
Yeah. He brings out, I regret that you saw my outburst.
Which I think was him just like sighing after standing up, right?
Mm-hmm. He's like a brief moment inside. And because they're arch, they're very straight back posture, but they look like they're having a pleasant time. And this is like my favorite Star Trek trope is when, and I like that they're getting into the season two, is like, I always like when two crew members are having a private chuckle over the foibles of a third.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Deanna and Riker laughing in their cups as Data walks away after completely misunderstanding human interaction, or you can think of a bunch of them. It's like always really entertaining, and like M'Benga and Ortega kind of like about Spock's outburst, I thought was cute.
Yeah. Yep. Feels good.
The crew ensemble, it's starting to work.
Yeah, I think so. Even though we've lost a couple of them, I guess we're definitely going to get Una back. Yeah.
After this episode. She's back by the end of this episode.
Lon asks Uhura for any comms and personal logs referencing Una, and Uhura refuses to break regulations by handing over those logs. This is exactly how I expected this interaction to go. And I was hoping it would go, because as soon as Uhura starts quoting a regulation, I'm like, there's no way she can break this. She takes her job way too seriously for her to relent here. And I was gratified to see that by the end of it, she did not relent.
I was too. And I was expecting her to be, because like this, it's human nature. Like your commanding officer comes up and is like, look, it's for our friend. Do it anyway. I'm giving you a direct order. There's like three different ways. And Uhura is a fucking rock. Which a little surprised me, because like if you remember last season, she's kind of wishy-washy about whether she wanted to be on the Federation or not. I guess she's got the zeal of the convert, and she's like, and it's ultimately right. Like, look, I know what you're trying to do, and I probably agree with your aims, but can we agree that giving me an illegal order, especially after you just got a speech about fruit of the poisonous tree, that this isn't going to help anyone and can end up hurting us? Like, you know, and that's not what Una Chin Riley would want for us, Lieutenant.
Right.
But yeah, I love seeing a Federation officer with backbone standing up against a superior officer trying to do an end round, run around regulations. You love to see it.
Mm-hmm. Especially one as storied as Uhura. Let me ask you this. So the damning evidence is in Lon's personal logs. She can't pull her own personal logs?
I didn't understand that. Like, were you supposed to understand that they are archived and she can't get, because like it kind of blew my mind that she couldn't just read it, but like also, or is she trying to ask for she's like wanting to see all communications? And like she's wanting to see did someone pull the
records? Is she
trying
to absolve herself? Like if she can see that somebody else had it in their logs, maybe.
Yeah, that could be it. That's actually a good idea too. But I was thinking more of like, you know, if she just looks and like, yep, I wrote that in a journal, that doesn't say that someone transmitted that record to Starfleet legal, right?
Oh, like she wants the records attached to like the access of those logs as well.
Because she says, I want all communications referring to Chin Riley in the past 6 months, including personal logs. So I think like it's not just the log. She wants to know like all the things that went into it. You know, she's trying to get like a big dossier of data. So I think, but you might be right too, that like, well, hell, if seven people were writing, hey, then I actually think I saw Una's palms glow yesterday, I think she's an Illyrian to death. Then she gives her
I don't know,
a little messy there. They do let you make your own inferences on a couple of these things.
I assume there's a big difference between a captain's log and a personal log, right? Because we see crews access captain's logs all the time without any red tape whatsoever.
True.
Like every time they come across a ship that's been destroyed and they don't know what happened. They go in and they examine the captain's logs.
Right. So, well, and I do think, because, like, they, you know, back in the old sailing days, captains did keep logs, and they were official, mm-hmm. like, counts of battle, like, you know, yeah. where the ship was at this time of day, how many people were on it, and it was, like, a public record. But haven't we even heard, like in Next Generation, like, Riker will be, like, you know, first officer's personal log. Mm-hmm. And I guess, like, there's, like, you got the public record, then you've got, like, the more diary thing. I think that's mm-hmm. what they're getting at.
Makes sense.
Because you're right, captain's log should be essentially... like a police blotter. Like, anyone should have access to that.
Yeah. All right. The trial begins. The charges are read and Una pleads not guilty. The prosecution makes their opening remarks. The genetic engineering is unnatural, Aaron. It's against God and nature. The defense does the same, claiming that the law as it stands is unjust.
And based on a baseless centuries-old fear.
There's a lot of things about the society they're living in that could be made illegal based on the argument it's unnatural.
It is
transporters,
weird. Wild to hear
matter
them.
Replicators.
Yeah.
Literally anything in your modern society is technically unnatural.
Yeah. The other thing, I was like, I don't know where else to talk about this, but, like, there's good reasons to be against eugenics aside from the fact that Khan nearly wiped out all of humanity back in the early, the mid 21st century, right? Like, that's something we debate now. Like, should we have designer babies?
Sure, definitely some more nuanced reasons. Or
yeah, like, what happens if the top 1% of the population is able to have gene therapies where their children are going to be on average 30 to 40% smarter than baseline humans? Or yeah. 34, like, is that a world we want to live in?
Talk about a wealth gap. I mean, now you have...
Yeah, and they're going to, they're going to start living longer.
Yeah.
They're going to be healthier longer. They're going to, like, that shit is stuff that I think people can rightly be uncomfortable about, you mm-hmm. know? Like, as making disparities and stuff. But, like, the show didn't, you know, they didn't touch that. Probably because it fucks up the point they're trying to make, you know? This is clearly...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, I took this as a trans allegory. Is that what you got out of this whole, or just because I mean, it definitely works on,
yeah,
you know, many different, like, could work on religious practice prejudices. So you could, you know, this could be talking about the people wearing hijab or the yarmulke, what is the Jewish version of that? Head coverings, religious observations, sexual lifestyles, gender, you know, like, yeah. Especially when they're talking about passing, mm-hmm. you know, like, because there's a whole, you know, various debates going around about that. It's like it's something that's not just about that, but I definitely thought that mm-hmm. was one of the things it was about.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
You always have imperfect analogies. You know, it's like I always go with True Blood. You know, True Blood is a loose allegory about how people feel about gay people. But mm-hmm. like in this allegory, the vampires are a lethal threat to humanity. They are recruiting like crazy, forcibly turning people, the vampires, against their will. Like mm-hmm. it's like when you actually get down to the text, it's problematic. And it's just like, yeah, there are good reasons to be against eugenics, especially if only a few people have them. And also you get super soldiers. But I think that gets mm-hmm. in the way of the overall point they're trying to make. So they just like neatly duck it. They make it seem it's very, like when she says it's centuries old baseless fear, it's centuries old. It's not a baseless fear. I've sure. seen the Wrath of Khan. He's a real fucker. I've seen Spacey. Yeah. That guy's a maniac. Good, you know, bad news if he took over. So, but I don't know. That's what happens with allegory, right?
Sure, it's definitely reductionist, and like the general argument, like I said, from the prosecution is this is a natural thing, and that is not persuasive to me at right. all.
No,
it's not nuanced enough to be persuasive. So,
right, it's not natural to die peacefully in your bed. And yet that's what we all aspire to. So
sure.
Go die screaming with a jaguar around your throat if you want a natural death, you know.
starve because you no longer can forage for food if you want a natural death. If you want to die comfy in bed, then join us in the unnatural world where we get to do shit.
Okay, a question for you about their legal system here. What happens if Una doesn't consent to Battelle as the prosecutor? Can she just postpone this trial for eternity by not consenting to the prosecutor?
I didn't even pick that up. She was allowed to consent to the prosecutor? Yeah. Was that only because there is a conflict of interest with her Bone and Pike? Or was that just like part
Possibly. I don't know. We don't know enough about the system. But
I imagine if she wouldn't consent, it'd be some kind of process you'd have to go through. You know, kind of like a change of venue. But not even get that. That's interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was. I was looking at all like, okay, how does this whole legal system here work? Because we don't often get this kind of glimpse into the Federation legal system.
And when we do, it's almost always ridiculous.
Yep.
Because these writers don't, they barely know how a fucking warp engine is supposed to work, let alone the complexities of the legal system they're trying to critique.
Speaking of always ridiculous, this next scene kills me, man. Again, don't know how the legal system works, but they call up Admiral April to the stand. Battelle asks if he would have sponsored Una's Starfleet application if he knew that she was modified. He says no. And then Neera gets to cross-examine him, asks why, and he says it's because of the Starfleet regulations. So she just goes on a fucking tangent like you've never seen. Objection after objection from the prosecution being completely ignored by the court, not answered, not even acknowledged by the court that someone has objected. And Neera is just off on this rip. She asks him about the Prime Directive and how he's broken that regulation before. So why wouldn't he have broken it to sponsor Una's application? Because he's a racist, obviously. And the judge then, after doing nothing for 45 minutes as she goes on a rant, finally strikes all that from the record and they recess. And then the crew wonders how any of that could have possibly helped Una, which I also wondered.
I thought, look, it's definitely adversarial, but she's making a point that these Starfleet captains do whatever the fuck they want. And it wasn't just like, yeah, it's like, and she started off with one. It's like, well, I'm trying to prevent a genocide. There was a pre-industrial civilization. There was a drought. I had Federation technology. I revealed. But she's like, one time he evaded confinement by revealing the starship. And like, I'm thinking like, you know, like, what the hell? Did he go on shore leave, get drunk at a bar and just, you know, had him beam him out of jail or something? Like how? But I think it's the point she's making is that like, this is General Order 1, the Prime Directive.
And you break it all the time.
This Admiral's broken it 3 times as a captain, and obviously he's not court-martialed, so there's obviously ways around the most important laws we have. So it's like, yes, he was a giant asshole.
Oh, I get the point, and I get I get the line of argument. What I don't get is the procedure. Like, when the prosecution objects, there should be some acknowledgement that the prosecution has objected, whether that's sustained or overruled.
Yeah.
Either way, they need to at least acknowledge that the prosecution exists in this scenario.
But they don't have a jury. Like, there's no person the judge advocate general can turn to and be like, you got to disregard all that crazy shit that person just said.
But then she does. She strikes it all from the record after
She strikes it from the record, but
Yeah, no, you're right. It was all procedure based. Like, the point she's making are fine and valid and good. What is the procedure of this court?
Yeah, you got an objection and it's being sustained. Like, at what point do you get the bailiff to come and tackle them? Authorizing phaser set to stun by the bailiffs. One more outburst from defense.
Yeah. Every time an objection is ignored, they crank it up one setting.
You're going to get personally disrupted if you make one more controversial statement.
And then we go in private here, where Admiral April says to Pike just how highly he thinks of Una, implying that Neera is doing a terrible job with her defense.
Well, and it's like, It's a difference of tactics, because he's basically saying, what if I, the nice, handsome Federation admiral, had gotten a chance to say that I personally decorated her for gallantry? And
yeah,
it's like, too bad the rest of the court didn't get to hear that today.
Might have swayed him.
I was trying to think of, like, is this, because, like, first, are we saying the Starfleet judge is not going to have access to her service record? Like, that's stuff usually on page one, all your different medals and whatnot. Like, I don't know. Is it make a bigger deal if, you know, because, like, none of these other character witnesses seem to, like, do anything. So I don't know. I was trying to figure out. And also, like, why? So this was a little insulting, I guess, to him. And he got, like, kind of some rough legal treatment. But he's not in legal jeopardy here. So, like, I don't know. No. I felt like Admiral April was a little...
Well, I think he holds Una in high regard, as he says, and he doesn't want to see her fry for this. So
it's more like he actually thinks the defense attorney's gone crazy.
Yeah, like, she's not going to... She's not helping the case. But it all works out. Una's pissed when she realizes that Neera isn't here to help her. She's here to fight the Federation. And there's clearly something personal in their past, as has been hinted before, but they still refuse to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Una wants to, but Neera's like, ah, no.
And Neera's like, see with me, what you see is what you get. And I'm like, except for we don't, because you don't look Illyrian. Yeah. I need to see your shit glow, all right? I need some glowing shit, some antenna.
That completes the trans allegory. They just can't go into the bathroom because their shit literally glows. And we would know. We would see the glowing shit from the stall and be like, you are an Illyrian.
You're taking a glowing shit over there. This is the non-glowing shit room. I'm calling the police.
Yeah.
There you go. Anyway, the defense calls three character witnesses, Lon, Spock, and Mbinga, and they are examined. They are cross-examined. They all speak very highly of Una, calling her family.
What do you think about Spock's... half smirk, eyebrow raise at his Gilbert and Sullivan musical joke. And what is it with Gilbert and Sullivan musicals and Starfleet personnel?
Yeah, can we just all together stop referencing Gilbert and Sullivan? What is it, 200, 400 years since they've been relevant? I know, but come on,
it's been a long time.
Reference Lin-Manuel Miranda, reference like some.
If you can't reference the Supreme Court statute that establishes the fruit of the poisonous tree, you cannot reference pop culture from before that date. Okay.
Right.
All right.
I'm with you.
I'm tired of Starfleet officers playing jazz and listening to classical music and reading Shakespeare. I want to see some. I want to see someone who's reading fucking Dan Brown. I want to see someone that's obsessed with Diane Steele romance novels.
Jesus, that would have been Gates McFadden. That would have been Beverly.
She's I get a reading. Captain that likes listening to the Beatles, which would still be classical music in their day? That's 300-year-old music in their day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the closest we get is Kirk blasting
like
Beastie
this
would
like us jamming to Green Sleeves, like mid, like, you know, Renaissance fair music.
Mm-hmm.
Come on,
I never intentionally listen to that song.
Yeah.
I don't know how I felt about that. I don't think it was great, but I do like him claiming that it's illogical for Starfleet to punish itself by getting rid of such a good officer as Una. That's good.
That was a good ass line about the Federation should not. It's illogical for the Federation to punish itself by refusing to use her services. Yeah, that was good.
Mm-hmm. And it was a judo move on the prosecution, who was trying to get him to admit something.
Also, what'd you say Noonien Soon's first name is? It's Lon?
Lon, yeah.
Lon's Una means family. I couldn't help but think of Lilo and Stitch. Like, Una means family. Una means never being left behind or forgotten. Jim, do you not know the meaning of Ohana? Oh my
god. No.
Okay, we'll have to fix that one of these days.
Do we have to fix that? Well, I feel like you're coming to the Leary and saying, yeah, we need to fix what's broken with you. And I'm like,
keep on shaving finer slices off of you. First, it's the I'm never watching Princess Bride. Shave that. It's now I'm never going to watch a Harry Potter. And now it's like I refuse to watch.
I'm not the one who's broken. You all are.
Support that ball with that comment. If you'd like to commission a Lilo and Stitch podcast and force Jim, cut another sliver off of him.
Let's do it. Look, if it means $250 in my pocket, I'm good.
Plus, the live action reboot's coming out. It's relevant again.
Oh, yeah?
Which that's going to be a middle.
How are they doing a live action of whichever one is the horrible, hideous monster?
That's a good question because did with the live action, the live action version of Sebastian and Flounder are so horrifying that if they do a live action version of Stitch, it fucking might look like a xenomorph.
Did they do puppets in The Little Mermaid or did they have like literal?
No, it's
lobsters?
All terrible CG.
Okay. I think they just flopped a lobster on the table with, you know, with the bands on its claws and everything just fresh out of the Kroger tank.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone is mad about having a little black mermaid, but the real horror show was a fucking photorealistic crab being her best friend. That's what the real problematic aspect of the film was.
We got to move on.
Yes,
can't
please.
Talk about this anymore.
Red alert. Here comes an ad break. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
It's the 40th anniversary of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom this week. And while the movie might be old enough to belong in a museum, our podcast is brand new. So join us for a conversation on the third or fourth best Indiana Jones movie, depending on who you ask, this Wednesday.
And if retro adventure movies aren't your thing, well, maybe you'll enjoy a time warp in the form of a prequel with the theatrical release of Furiosa. Flashback with us to a time when Charlize Theron looked like Anna Taylor-Joy, and strap in for another epic George Miller action movie this Thursday on Bald Move Pulp.
And finally, we're wrapping up our 4-week coverage of the 1980 TV miniseries Shogun. Get the final verdict on Yabu, JB, Mariko, and the rest of the gang this Thursday on Bald Move Prestige.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car?
The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. Let's boldly go back to the episode. Welcome back to Baldly Go.
Neera asks if Lon has made any progress on that illegal evidence thing she was investigating. Lon says she thinks it was her fault that Una was exposed because she talked about it in her personal log. Neera says there's no way that could have been true because enough time hasn't passed for the proper procedure, blah, 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 Federation, regulation. And they both wonder who could it have been then? Somebody who could gain something from exposing the truth. No, exactly the opposite.
I do have evil Federation whiplash. Like, you know, I've been watching three seasons of the Federation getting up to the dirtiest of stuff and like Picard and whatnot. And like, mm-hmm. Here is a Starfleet, not even a Starfleet officer, a defense attorney, which seems like it must be true, but it seems like the height of naivete. Yeah.
Yeah.
For her to be like, it takes 6 months of paperwork and countless right. admirals authorization to even sniff a person's personnel log. Like, you believe that there aren't people in the Federation that can just section 34? Come on.
Right.
But it's actually refreshing that someone here is a public servant with faith in this rock solid that hates the Federation, but yeah, still yeah. knows that the Federation would follow its own fucking rules. Okay. I thought that was kind of sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it. I don't know. And there's kind of a discussion here about, you know, Lon's own mods and stuff that we didn't really get into. But yeah, I generically agree or generally agree that like genetics are not the be all end all. I mean, it's kind of one of the points they make in that DS9 episode with Bashir. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, we can give you intelligence and we can give you hand-eye coordination. But what we can't give you is a personality. We can't give you ambition. We can't give you kindness. None of that comes with those things. Mm-hmm. That's you. And I am generally of the opinion that that would be true.
What if you're genetically modified to be 37% more empathetic, though?
Can you do that?
And 27%
I don't know how
more
you
charming.
Would do that.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Like, are there genes for telling good jokes, for telling yeah. stories well? Are there genes for being kind to others? I don't know. I don't think
There's
so.
There's also, I really like the point about this fear, because she's like, you're afraid that your modifications that, you know, we thought were dormant or not that dormant, and they're going to make you a monster. But that fear is not something that's within you. It's been drilled into you.
Yeah.
This is society teaching you to fear yourself. And it's like, mm-hmm. man, that's a real trip. If you're growing up imagine what it's like to grow up in a society where you, before maybe even realize that this defines you, that you are told that like a genetically modified person is a freak, a genetically modified person is a killer. They can't be trusted. They're ruthless. They're bloodthirsty. And then you find that that is you. Like the amount of self-hatred and self-fear that could manifest would be pretty intense. And I really felt for Lon here, and for any kid that grows up in an environment telling that being told that who they are is something that's evil.
Tons of kids do. And it's not just a race thing. It's not just those issues, but like religion teaches you that.
Sure.
Vast majority of religions teach you that you are a flawed, imperfect thing. And I might agree with the imperfect thing, but what you are not is inherently bad. But that's what they would tell you, that you have to overcome your own nature in order to be accepted. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, agreed. Like, you know, but even in within religion, there's also some religions that fear and distrust other religions, most religions. And, you know, you can get a religious minority grows up in those environments that can be all fucked up, too. But yeah, it's like it's some pretty good writing. I liked it. And I'm actually excited to see. I kind of hoped when I heard Noonien sing, I'm like, I think that's kind of cool. I have a super soldier as a security officer. And I do hope they play with a little bit of like, you know, what kind of modifications did you have and how's that going to, you know, and then like how much of her light has she been hiding? You know, like is she like super strong and she just hasn't flashed that out because she doesn't want to out her? Like she's become a much more interesting character.
When your friends and crewmates are being murdered by a vicious Gorn, you're not going to bust out the super arms?
Especially when you were...
I don't know.
Did that come out in the last season's Gorn episode that she was rescued from like a Gorn breeding operation?
Something like
every
that.
Every fucking word of that is horrifying.
Yeah. Something like that.
Huh. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, no, she's, I love it. A psychologically traumatized, genetically engineered super version of Kamina Drummer from The Expanse. I can't wait.
Yeah, let's see it. All right, the trial continues. Una is called to testify. She talks about why she joined Starfleet despite the risks and what it was like growing up as a genetically modified person. Una tells that story and then adds a personal apology into it for Neera, for leaving all the other Illyrians behind. And Neera asks who turned her in, and Una reveals that I turned myself in because I was sick of lying and wanted to make a point about how Illyrians aren't as bad as they fear. It's all very emotional, so the Vulcan steps in to suck all that emotion out of the room, drag everyone from the Enterprise crew into the case in a charge of conspiracy because Captain Pike also knew.
Yeah, it kind of backs the fuck off Battelle because, like, saying, like, my colleague did not do the due diligence and ask the right question, so I'm going to do it right here, right now. I'm going to establish this as a conspiracy, and this is far from being inspirational. This person's so toxic that she's already corrupted one of our best commanding officers, and she should be found guilty and I'll try. Yeah, he's a lot. He's a fucking lot.
But this speech that Rebecca Romijn here is giving, she delivers it very well. I was very moved by everything she was saying, especially when she gets to the personal apology stuff. When I think it was the moment when Neera realized what she was doing, like, oh, and one more thing, I need to apologize here in front of everyone for all the wrongs, you know, that I've done to you. I thought it was a really good turn, and then it just got more emotional from there.
Yeah, and this is also the speech that's going to establish all three points of the... And I had no idea that's what's going on until they did. Yeah. It's one of those few things really I appreciated smart. The flashback to the statements as they're saying, the kind of because they do. The all three elements of the... what is it? The not clemency, the sanctuary request are being made here. The asylum requests are being made here. And it all tracks.
Yeah, I mean, she didn't technically request asylum, but it's easy enough to see it that way if you're so inclined. And I think,
well, especially since it's like it's a great refute to the Pasok's claim of like, well, now that we're injecting the emotion, we need to get this right back to the fucking law. And it's like a great judo move. She's like, all right, if you want to go by the strict meanings of the law, here's the Federation's you know, 3-part test for asylum. And it's great. It's great because it's her using this guy's strict legalistic, you know, fuck context, fuck nuance, just letter of the law against him. Yeah. And honestly, it's the most sophisticated. I know we've said kind of shit about it, but I actually think this is one of the more sophisticated courtroom scenes we've seen in Star Trek, and they average about one a season.
Yeah, I was going to say, as bad as I thought that previous courtroom scene was, I think this is 3 times as good as that was. Like,
yeah.
It more than made up for that scene.
Right. And it helps that, like, on a lot of courtroom scenes, like, one or both of the members on trial is a literal devil, or the judge is a literal demigod, or, you know,
it's
Wesley stepped on a greenhouse. Like, this has actually got some meat to it and some actual courtroom strategery. I liked it.
Yeah. No, and some on the fly thinking. I always like to see that, right? Like,
yeah,
it's not that she had this defense planned. It's that she saw an opportunity and she struck. It's good.
It makes Nier out to be very clever because, like, you know, Una surmises she assembled all this information. It's a high risk thing because, boy, what if she was wrong about, you know, who revealed, you know, what if, like, Una didn't know? What if she didn't reveal herself? But, like, I guess it looked pretty bad anyway. Pasak was closing for the kill, so she did a Hail Mary, an educated guess. But,
and I mean, when she starts off, Nira is just trying to say, hey, she's a good person. You know, she's trying to get the, and she's had it rough. You know, these hardships are something significant in her life. We need to give her a little bit of latitude here. What she doesn't realize is that she's inadvertently establishing this law that is going to, or this idea that she could be protected by the law that the Vulcan's going to just walk into. And we didn't really, like, recap that part, but yeah, Vulcan steps up, says it's logical to find her guilty, and Nira has Batel read this regulation about asylum, and she fits all of those regulations to a T, and the judges rule her not guilty.
Yep. And the fact that captains can, I guess, you know, like, ad hoc and in the field grant provisional asylum and things like that, because of course they can, right?
Yeah.
Especially this era of Starfleet captain. So they got, she just hoisted Pasak up by his own logic.
And then in a final scene here, we see Una thanking Nira for saving her, as does the crew of the Enterprise, or at least the bridge crew. And some nurses, some doctors. Then the crew welcomes Una home, and Pike hugs her, which I think is surprising.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've done a pretty good job of leaving the romantic tension out of their role, and I hope they continue to do that. I thought this was like a friendly hug, though.
Oh, yeah.
Why do you think it was surprising?
I think it was surprising to Una. She was not. Because she doesn't reciprocate it very much. She didn't know how to feel about that hug, even though
Now you're making me think they're going to start leaning into, like, the, like, Pike and Batel are going to be on the out, so, but, like, I just don't.
I don't
Captain or
think
First
so.
Officer. I don't know.
No, I don't think they're going there.
Okay, good.
She was just surprised, I guess, by the hug. Not like wondering, ooh, what does it mean?
Gotcha.
Just like, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, and there's like little bitterness that, like, because the crafty Federation admiral found a way to very limit, like, you know, again, by granting asylum, that's essentially, you know, it dismisses the larger question of what should Illyrians be.
It gives
outlawed.
The judges an out. Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
an
they
easy
don't,
out.
We don't
to just
we're,
say,
there's no precedence forming here.
Yeah.
You know, other than, if you have a rough life and you come to the Federation, you ask for asylum, we'll give it to you. But, you know, like Nira pointed out, it's like, well, it's, you know, it wasn't a landmark case. It is a technicality, but I'm looking at a Starfleet crew that proudly serves under an Illyrian commander. And that's a good start. You know, winning over the Federation, hearts and mind, one at a time. Like, because that mirrors your real life. A lot of times when you get these landmark civil rights things, they aren't like these big sweeping things that ultimately settle the question like we hope. It's like usually a very narrow thing, but it is progress. And sometimes it's easy to get down and think about, like, oh, it's just things that never get better, blah, blah, blah. But I like how Nira looked at it. It's a good start.
Yeah, you got to chip away at those big problems.
And I also liked how no-nonsense Una was, because, like, her whole crew is, like, making puppy dog eyes at her, and she's like, you know, well, thank you, and now get back to your fucking stations, let's get back to work. Because I am the first officer, goddammit.
Yeah. And that's the episode.
Yep. So that is what we thought about this episode. What did you think about it? Our hailing frequencies are open at StarTrek@baldmove.com. We'll be back with a feedback episode, or consider some at the end of the podcast, in a podcast near you soon here on this feed. Thanks for listening. If you would like to follow along with us, everything else we're doing, because man, we're about to start a bunch of stuff: Foundation, Justified, City Primeval, The Bear, Season 2. You can follow us at twitter.com/baldmove. And if you'd like to get access to our ad-free feeds and our bonus audio and visual content and help support us doing what we're doing here at Bald Move, we'd be happy to have you in our club at support.baldmove.com. That's going to do it for this week. Until next week, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See you later.